Coming up today at 1 on Hometown Heroes, a son honors the father he never met and takes us on his journey to discover what really happened to his dad in World War II.
And he said, "Roger, there were two survivors of your dad's plane crash."
That was just one of the revelations in a story that keeps getting more intriguing, with one twist so mind-blowing it's tough to even consider. Decide for yourself on a Memorial Day edition of Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Morrison's RV Parts and Service at 180 and Academy in Sanger.
This is Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or perhaps how small your hometown might be, there are men and women around you who have done incredible things for the sake of our freedom, and we don't want to forget that. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so they're not forgotten, and along the way, we're educated, oftentimes inspired, and boy, are you in for a journey today, a special Memorial Day edition of Hometown Heroes. So often we hear from the veterans themselves, and we regret that so many veterans have passed on and aren't around to tell their stories. But that doesn't mean all hope is lost. We're going to hear a story today from Roger Murray about his father, who didn't come home from World War II, one of the more than 405,000 Americans who gave their lives in the service of our country. His father earned a Distinguished Service Cross and a Purple Heart. And maybe that's about the extent of your knowledge of your dad growing up, Roger. Tell me about your childhood and what you knew about this father that you never had the opportunity to meet.
Well, basically, I knew that my father was shot down and killed during World War II as a B-25 pilot flying in North Africa. I had seen a couple of documents that my mom had. One was from Harry Truman, and it stated, "In grateful memory of First Lieutenant Roger W. Jameson," who was my father, "who died in the service of his country in the Mediterranean area, March 29th, 1943. And it states that he stands in the unbroken line of patriots who have dared to die that freedom might live and grow and increase his blessings. Freedom lives, and through it he lives in a way that humbles the undertaking of most men. So I had seen that in a scrapbook that my mom had. And in the same scrapbook, there was a letter that was from a brigadier general to my mom. And it said, "Dear Mrs. Jameson, I have the honor to inform you that by direction of the President, the Distinguished Service Cross has been posthumously awarded to your husband, First Lieutenant Roger W. Jameson. The citation relating to this award is as follows: for extraordinary heroism and achievement while participating in a bombing mission against an enemy target on March 29, 1943, as the aircraft piloted by Lieutenant Jameson was approaching the target. It was badly damaged by heavy bursts of anti-aircraft fire and almost immediately burst into flames. Though he could have turned back and abandoned the ship, he held his course with dauntless determination and courage, enabling the Navigator bombardier to drop his bombs on the target. Leaving the formation in an attempt to recover control of his disabled aircraft, he remained at the controls to enable three of his crew members to escape by parachute from the doomed aircraft shortly before it plunged into the sea. The gallant action of Lieutenant Jameson is exemplary of the highest standards and courage and devotion of our armed forces." So that was really all I knew about my father. My dad was not really a topic of discussion as I was growing up. And for my whole life, up until 2 years ago, I thought that the men that bailed out that were mentioned in this document were strafed on the way down by the Germans.
Which happened a lot, especially at that time in the war. So you thought no one survived this crash. I want to get to what your understanding was of your dad, because here you're a young man growing up. You have your mother, you have your stepfather, who had actually known your father and was himself a pilot. So your view of your dad, you thought he's one of the heroes of World War II, or what did you think about him? What did you know about him?
Just essentially that he was a war hero. The reason that my name is different, because my real father wasn't a topic of conversation, he really wasn't part of my life as I was growing up, I took my stepfather's name out of respect for him raising me. and just kind of went on with my life.
So since he was in the Air Force, you grew up in a lot of interesting places, different air bases around the world. And the story of where you went to high school is pretty interesting, because I think your commute to high school was a little different than most people's.
Yeah, with my stepdad being a career officer, we traveled all over the world. I went to 14 different schools before I graduated from high school. I went to school on Guam, throughout the United States, in Nebraska, Alabama, etc. Then my stepdad was assigned the duty of being a commanding officer of a secret missile base in southern Italy. Because it was a missile base, there were no Air Force infrastructures in that area. So the closest Air Force high school was in Wiesbaden, Germany. There were approximately 20 of us American families in southern Italy that had kids that had to go to high school. So they had two C-47s. They had one for the boys and one for the girls. And so we would load up in the C-47s wearing Mae West, sitting on jump seats. These were old World War II planes.
Yeah.
We would fly from southern Italy to Marseille, France to refuel and then make it. It was about a 9-hour flight from there to Wiesbaden, where I attended school. They would fly us home on the holidays or at the end of school.
A little different than most of our high school experiences.
Right. What was interesting is that the school that I went to was named General H.H. Arnold High School. That meant nothing to me. That was just another name of another general or dignitary in the Air Force. What I found out several years ago as I started a book about my father, I found documents written by General H.H. Arnold to my mother, telling her about my dad's courage and his exploits in the service as a pilot. And that was the first that I knew of who General H.H. Arnold really was.
So all those years growing up, did your mother ever say anything about your dad? Did you ever kind of have that thought in the back of your head, I wonder if there's something more to my father's story?
I really didn't. My mom, I think, felt uncomfortable talking about my father in front of my stepdad. My stepdad was in Strategic Air Command. He was gone quite a bit. When he was gone, Mom, she would just kind of sit and share with me at times that she felt in her heart that my dad was still alive. And she mentioned that many times as I was growing up, you know, as a young boy, and that it's something you kind of grasp onto and kind of hope maybe somehow my dad would be out there somewhere, but never pursued it. It was just something that we discussed and moved on.
Mm-hmm.
What is very interesting is that my stepdad knew my father. And when we lived in southern Italy, the Italians in that area are dark-complected, brown eyes. And at that time, where we lived was not a vacation spot. It wasn't any place where tourists would be. And I found out later, after I was already married and had children, a story that I found to have some credibility. The fact that my mom and my stepdad were walking downtown in Taranto, Italy, and they came around the corner and they ran into a young boy, several years younger than I, that looked like my twin. He was blue-eyed, blonde hair, and my mother froze in her tracks and spun and started walking away. And my stepdad caught up to her and said, "Do you want me to approach the boy and talk to him?" And my mother said, "No, let sleeping dogs lie." Later, I found out recently from my sister that my dad also saw this boy at a bus stop staring at him. And then several weeks later, we lived in a ninth-story apartment building in Italy. My sister and my stepdad were looking over the balcony nine stories down, and that boy was standing looking up at my stepdad and my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this happened so many years ago, and then my sister confirmed that recently as I was writing my books.
Well, and we'll come back to that later, because some people are saying, well, where's the story going here? Well, let's get on as your quest eventually finds more time for you to learn details of what actually happened to your dad? Because this, I think this is an important thing to note here. So often people find out, well, the records burned down in St. Louis. I can't find anything about my dad, whether that's someone who made it home from the war and has since died and never talked about it, or someone, in, as in your case, your father never made it home from the war. You never met him. There's always something else that can be found. And I imagine for you now, Roger, with your book in publication and available on Amazon. We'll be talking about that. His book, if you want to look it up right now, is called Letters Home from a Fallen Hero, A Son's Quest for His Father. Can you imagine how different your life would be if you had never started this quest, if you hadn't pursued anything?
It's somewhat changed my life, and it's changed somewhat my makeup, because in the process of learning about my father through 140 letters that I found in a box that my grandmother had that he had written to her, I now started learning who he was. And in that process, I've learned who I am.
Amen.
Quite a few similarities between his personality and mine.
And when was this that you found the box of letters?
I knew they were in existence, but I wasn't in a mental place to pursue it. I pulled one or two letters out and looked at them and put them back. And then in May of 2012, I just decided that I was going to transcribe his letters and memorialize him, and I really wanted to do that for my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
As I started transcribing his letters, I found 22 letters that my mom had written to my grandmother from the day they got married till the day my dad went overseas.
And the day they got married was the day he
earned
his wings.
My dad got his wings.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this box, I found 11 letters that my grandmother had written to my dad, describing my mother's pregnancy and the fact that she was a riveter for Douglas Aircraft.
Your grandmother, 50 years
old. My grandmother, 50 years old.
Tells you something about what America was doing back then.
Right.
She goes to work in an aircraft plant riveting airplanes together.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So the letters that I found of hers were in a batch that were returned to her by the War Department. They were stamped MIA. She received these letters 3 months after my dad was killed. That kind of put me in a place of just thinking how that had to have hit her. So these letters have been transcribed and chronicled in the book, and that's how I started out. And then there's just been so many things that have occurred after I started writing these letters and transcribing them that there's really two stories. There's my dad's story, and then there's my story. There's just so many circumstances that have to be more than just that. It has to be spiritual intervention there. Circumstances on my journey finding now out about my dad.
Help us along this journey then. Tell us what it was like for you. What was the next step for you? And give us a sense of some of those things that have started to materialize for your understanding.
Well, if I could, I'd like to just kind of go back.
Sure.
To kind of put this in some perspective. So I talked about the story of the boy.
Yeah.
I left Germany and came back to the States by myself under the name Roger Murray. My dad was not a topic of conversation. I was Roger Murray. I moved in with my grandmother and I enrolled in Fullerton Junior College. And I was sitting on campus talking to an elderly teacher and he kept staring at me. And he finally said, "I know you." And I said, "Sir, you can't. I just got here. I just got here from Germany." He says, "No, I know you. What's your name?" I said, "Roger Murray." He goes, "No." He said, "Your father went here." And I said, "Well, he did in 1940, 41. He said his name was Roger Jameson. And there's a plaque in his honor in the foyer in the school.
And you didn't even know that?
No. I never gave any thought to my dad going there. The hair went up on the back of my neck for him to pick me out 21 years later out of all the students that he'd seen. So that's part of my story on the circumstance or spiritual intervention. And then following that, in 1976, I was working for Edison in Palm Springs. My mother calls me and she says, "Roger, there's a Colonel Miller that lives in Palm Springs and he was the last one to see your father alive. You might want to give him a call." So I call Colonel Miller and introduce myself. I said, "My name's Roger Murray. My dad was Roger Jameson. And my mom gave me your phone number." And he says, "Come on over, we want to see you." So I went over to the house, knocked on the door. When he opened the door, he yelled to his wife, "Gladys, you need to come see this." Well, evidently I looked pretty similar to my father.
Mm-hmm.
So we became very good friends. I moved out of the area. In 1981, I was a district manager for Edison in Santa Barbara. The chairman of the board called me and he said, "Roger, we have a customer that's very influential. He's a retired vice president, Southern Pacific Railroad, and he has a problem with Edison and you need to go take care of it."
And of course, you wouldn't be telling us about it if there wasn't another eye-opening twist about to result from that assignment. It's time for a break, but we haven't heard anything yet. The most amazing revelations and coincidences are still to come on this Memorial Day edition of Hometown Heroes. Our guest, Roger Murray, author of Letters Home from a Fallen Hero. You can find it on Amazon.com, and I do have the links up on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and HometownHeroesRadio.com. As we pause to remember and reflect back on those who have paid the ultimate price for our freedom, Roger's story today will remind us that there's always something to look forward to also. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, a special Memorial Day edition. Perhaps you're hearing this program for the first time today. Typically, we spend the hour listening to a World War II veteran relate his experiences in combat. It sure adds to our perspective when we hear what it was really like and how great a sacrifice our greatest generation made for the rest of us. There were more than 405,000 Americans who died while serving in World War II. So often, their stories are forgotten. Our guest today, Roger Murray of Visalia, California, was just an infant when his father, Roger Jameson, was reported killed in action after his B-25 was shot down. The adventure of unraveling his father's story layer by layer is chronicled in Roger's book, Letters Home from a Fallen Hero. You can find a link at hometownheroesradio.com. And when we left off, some pieces of his dad's story had gradually come into focus. And then, as a manager for Southern California Edison, Roger was sent out to follow up on a customer's concern. Little did you know, Roger, that what must have seemed like a pretty mundane and random appointment would lead to even more clues along this journey of discovery.
So I went out and met the customer in Montecito and found out that he was very concerned about one of my meter readers told him that he could have a fire in his meter panel. And I said, "That doesn't sound too typical. Let's go check it." I opened up the lid of his panel. It's raining. He's standing with my sport coat over my head as I'm checking the connections on his panel, which is atypical. We don't normally do that, but he was so concerned that I wanted to alleviate that. Well, we struck up a friendship. Several months later, this gentleman called me. He knew that I collect Edison memorabilia and just all kinds of historical items. He wanted to know if I was in my office, and I said, "Yes, sir." So he drives to my office and opens up the trunk of his car, and he had a stack of newspapers that filled the back of his car. And he said, "I want you to have these. These are my mother's. It's her collection, and I want you to have them." So I took the newspapers home. I had a workshop. I spread them out on the floor. I was reading Winds of War at the time, and I was chronicling the newspapers to what I was reading. Colonel Miller calls. I hadn't seen him in quite a few years. And he says, "Roger, we're in the area. We'd like to come by and say hi." So they came to the house. I said, "Jim, you need to come see what I have here. I want you to show you these magazines and newspapers." We go in the garage, and as he picks up a newspaper, four clippings fell out of the newspaper, and they were maps. And he says, "Roger, do you understand the significance of these? I said, no, not really. He said, this is where your father was killed. Well, it's an area called Sfax in Tunisia. I had no clue where my dad went down. I knew he went down in the Mediterranean. That was all I knew. And now I actually have the maps that show where he went down.
In a stack of newspapers.
Stack of newspapers. So I called the customer and I said, sir, were you in World War II? He said, no. I said, did you have a brother or a relative in World War II? No. I said, why would your mother cut out of all these newspapers, why would those be the only maps that she cut out? He says, I don't have a clue.
Hmm.
So everything's now starting to come together.
I don't want to get all melodramatic,
yeah.
But were you starting to feel that it was almost your destiny to discover something, that there was a lot more out there, and that if you sought it, you would find it?
Not at the time.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, my grandson wanted to do a report on my dad. So he calls me and said, Grandpa, I found your father, and he's buried in Tunisia. Well, I didn't know that. I started researching that. That's when I started, at the same time, to write the book about my dad, transcribing the letters.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of interesting in the letters that I found, the ones that my mother wrote, we mentioned that my mom married my dad on March 16th when he got his wings. She was one of 4 war brides that would follow the guys up and down the coast before they went overseas. And so she writes, Mom Susie, we girls went up to Stockton to see the boys. The boys couldn't leave the post. And so we girls go into the officers' club and have dinner. And she says, one by one, we sneak out in the parking lot and do a little loving in our designated cars. This is my 20-year-old mother.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was really awesome. That really hit home to me, and it showed the love that they had and the openness that she had with my grandmother. I contacted Colonel Miller. I would call him about every 6 months and just check on him. And he informed me that there was the last ever bomb group reunion in Seattle, and that he was going from Arizona. And he said, Roger, you need to go. I wanted to go to be with him and his family. Again, I didn't know that much about my dad or the campaign, or I had his letters. So I took my book that I had written at the time, which is just essentially the letters. I walked into the hospitality room. They had tables laid out throughout the whole room of memorabilia that people brought to share with others. As I walk over to a table, I see an old book, and it's called The Earthquakers. And I'm there by myself, and I pick up the book and I started thumbing through it. I came to page 65 in the book, and it chronicles my dad's crash. That's the first time I'd seen it in print like that. It kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. You know, it formalized this. Then there was a stack of mission reports in some folders. As I'm thumbing through the folders, I actually found the actual mission report, March 29th, 1943, describing the mission that my dad was on, describing his crew, and describing the fact that he went down and perished. But it also identified the crew members. Well, all of this time, I felt that those guys had perished. And so later, I followed up and was advised to go into an Army Air Force website. I went in and I input the names of the crew members because I wanted to contact their families, because my dad had written about a couple of these guys and I wanted them to know about my book and that.
But again, your understanding is this entire crew perished, so anyone you get in contact with is on a similar quest to you, learning something about someone who never came home from the war.
Right, right. So within days of me submitting the names of the crew members, I had an email from a gentleman in Michigan, and he said, Roger, there were 2 survivors of your dad's plane crash, and their names are Sergeant Lang and Anderson, and Sergeant Lang wrote a book about being a prisoner of war.
How'd you keep your eyes inside your head at that point?
I was somewhat numb. And when he related that, well, here's the name of the book, and, oh, by the way, his son lives in Astoria, Oregon, and here's his phone number, and he's a retired Coast Guard commander. So I'm sitting on the couch with my wife at 8:30 at night, and I have my Kindle. I download the book, and the first page is my dad, it mentions my dad as being the pilot. And then it goes in and describes the day of the mission and the fact that my dad lined all the guys up in front of the plane, thoroughly inspected their chutes, their weaponry, etc. And the Sergeant Lang comments that he'd never done that before. There was something that they felt.
He knew it was a treacherous mission.
Premonition. In fact, in the book that Sergeant Lang writes, it was so strong that he got in a Jeep, drove across the field to say goodbye to one of his friends. Just something that they felt.
And I'm sure people at home, I don't want to get you off track here, but I'm sure people at home are wondering, well, what was this mission? Where were they? What were they doing? What made it so dangerous? What can you tell us about that?
The 12th Bomb Group was fighting Rommel in Egypt and in North Africa. And Rommel and his forces were beating up the British 8th Army pretty badly. And Rommel's quest was to take over Egypt in the area because of the oil production. They needed that to feed the war machine. Mm-hmm. And that's when Roosevelt and Churchill agreed to have American forces come in and help the British. So we had the American Army troops that were in supporting the 5th Army, and then our bombers, the B-25 group and some B-24s, etc., were fighting the Battle of El Alamein, trying to turn back Rommel. And if we weren't successful, the outcome of the war could have been quite a bit different.
No doubt.
So that's what my dad was involved in. In fact, on one of the campaigns, they flew 7 missions in one day, attacking the tanks and their supply troops and that. My dad was hit on one of those missions. And as I stated earlier, the plane was on fire, but the guys decided to continue the mission, drop their bombs. And then that's when Dad peeled off. The plane was hit on the co-pilot side. It's on fire. My dad gets control of the plane per eyewitness reports and feathers the engine on that side. And
this is a B-25 and he's the pilot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So he feathers the engine and they're still going at this point.
They're still going, and the Sergeant Lang writes in his accounts that the plane now is engulfed in flames. He lost all communications with the front of the plane, my dad and co-pilot and bombardier. The tail gunner was able to get out of the escape hatch. Sergeant Lang is hung up with his chute on a desk. Flames are swirling through the plane where he's at. He states that the skin is burning off of his face and burning off of his arms. He's trying to free the parachute up. He finally is able to do that and is able to escape just prior to the plane exploding and going into the ocean. When I was in Seattle with Colonel Miller, I knew that Colonel Miller was the last one to see my dad alive. In fact, my dad even gave him a pin per Colonel Miller, said, hold this for me until I get back. As I'm walking with Colonel Miller to an event that they were having at the reunion, he looks at me and he said, Roger, are you aware that I am the one that told your dad that you were born and that he died that day?
And you've known him all these years and he hasn't told you this?
No. And I said, no, sir, I didn't know that. Hit me pretty hard again. It was just incredible.
And one of the things that people will find out if they read your book, you have that cablegram that had been received that day, and so it was Miller who ran out and told your dad,
yep,
you're a father.
Yeah. Yeah.
The day he ended up getting killed,
right,
the day his plane went down,
right,
he found out that you were born.
And I'm learning so many things so quickly. It was overwhelming. He also relates to me that my dad flew with him on the West Coast submarine patrol before they went over to North Africa because there was a threat of the Japanese Navy coming in to the West Coast. Well, I didn't know that. Later that evening, about 10 o'clock at night, I'm sitting in this hospitality room with another gentleman whose grandfather was a B-25 crewman. We're talking, and this gal came over to me. This is about 10 o'clock at night, and she says, I want to show you something. I said, what? She says, well, I've written about your father's crash. I said, pardon me? She says, I want to show you what I've written. She says, I've been writing a book for 13 years, and I've been documenting stories. Well, I'm sitting there with a name tag on Roger Murray, son of Roger Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
And she had seen the book that I had laid there, my manuscript of the letters. So she sits down with me and she opens up the last 2 pages of her manuscript. And it's a complete accounting of a Captain Cameron following my dad's plane and watching the plane being hit and then describing the fact that they saw three parachutes come out of the plane, two from the back, and the eyewitness account shows that there was one chute that came out of the front, hurled out of the front just before the plane exploded. And so I asked her, I said, why would you write about my dad with all these guys that we lost in that? She said, there was just something that compelled me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the story just keeps coming.
So now with this account of that five-man crew, and you were shocked to know even two survived, and
right.
Now you're saying, wait a second, maybe three survived.
Right. So now it kind of flashes back to my mom thinking, you know, I still feel that your dad's alive. That now comes back to the story of the young boy that was spotted in Italy. So now it opens these doors of, well, could the other parachute have been my dad?
And you told us earlier your grandson had discovered he's buried in Tunisia, but there's his name there.
His name's there, but he crashed in the ocean, so there were no bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that's a supposition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a Twilight Zone type
thing. And in Tunisia, they memorialize your father, the co-pilot, and the bombardier. If there was a third chute to come out the front of the plane, it had to be one of those three.
Right. The likelihood of it being the bombardier is somewhat unlikely in the fact that he would be in the nose of the plane. Because of the access tunnel to get to the nose, they had to leave the parachute back in the midsection of the plane because they couldn't fit with the parachute on. And if the plane is on fire and in the front vicinity, it's doubtful that could have been him. Secondly, the plane was hit on the co-pilot side. So, I don't know.
So, just taking all of your emotions out of it, if someone came out the front of the plane, just by sheer probability and your knowledge of the circumstances, of the three candidates, the most likely would have been your father.
Correct. But, you know, the possibility of that is very remote, but it's still just a little thing that's open in the back of my mind.
So what happened next?
About a year and a half ago, I was in my garage. I was going through some old memorabilia that I had, some old coin collections and things. And as I opened a can, I found there was a dollar bill that was all folded up that I've had probably since I was 8 or 9 years old. Never paid attention. It was just an old dollar bill.
And it's amazing you didn't spend it somewhere. I've got a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
They know how to get rid of a dollar pretty easy.
Right. So when I unfold the dollar bill, I see that my dad's name is written at the top, R.W. Jameson, and it's dated 5/4/42. And the first signature under that is Colonel Miller. He was a lieutenant at the time. And there are some 16 names written on this thing, and it's called a short snorter. I'm sitting in my office, and I'm trying to distinguish the names, and there was a name, Gaylord D. Holmes, that I could distinguish. So I went on the internet, and I pulled up the name Gaylord D. Holmes, and it shows that there's one in Sublimity, Oregon. I found that the phone number for Gaylord D. Holmes. So I called it. An elderly lady answered the phone, and I said, my name's Roger. My father was Roger Jameson, and I found a document that has Gaylord D. Holmes' name on it, and I wanted to know if you knew of anyone in Sublimity by that name. She says, it's my husband. Do you want to talk to him?
I bet that hair was standing up on your neck again.
I said, absolutely.
And I know none of us can wait to find out what he had to say, but we're going to have to just for a minute. Time for a break, but we'll find out how Roger Murray's picture of the father he never met became clearer and clearer when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, a special Memorial Day edition in which, instead of hearing from a veteran himself as usual, we learn the story of one of the 405,000 Americans who died while serving in World War II, a B-25 bomber pilot and recipient of the Purple Heart and Distinguished Service Cross, Roger W. Jameson. We're gleaning his story piece by piece from the son he never got to meet, Roger Murray. And we've heard how Roger spent most of his life knowing next to nothing about his dad, only to have well-timed clues lead him to huge revelations. When we left off, Roger had seen the name Gaylord Holmes on a crumpled dollar bill he had inexplicably held on to for decades. Then he found that Mr. Holmes was still living at age 94 in Sublimity, Oregon, and you were about to talk to him.
So he gets on the phone, and I said, "Sir, my name's Roger Murray. My dad was Roger Jameson." He says, "Roger Jameson." He said, "I was his navigator before he got his own crew." And he says, "Let me tell you a few things about your father." He said, "Your father adored your mother. And whenever he would get a letter from your mom, he would read excerpts of the letter to the crew. And I've talked about your father for 70 years. And I said, "Why would you do that?" He says, "Well, are you aware that your dad died the day he found out you were born?" And I said, "Yes, sir. I just found that out." He says, "We have to meet." He says, "Can you come up and see me?" So I contacted the son of Sergeant Lang, who lived in Astoria. We had been in communication with each other as a result of finding out about his dad. So his son met me in Portland, Oregon, and the two of us went and spent 2 days with Gaylord and his wife. And Gaylord spent 2 days just sharing personal stories about my dad. I didn't want to hear about war stories. I wanted to learn about him. Turns out that Gaylord was his best friend, and when the boys went on R&R, they went together. They went to Bethlehem, Jerusalem, all of those things together. So he knew my dad quite intimately, and it brought a whole new dimension to me about my dad.
And did you find out why they'd all signed their names on that dollar bill, what that was all about?
Yeah, it turned out to be a tradition that was started in 1920. When crews went overseas, they would sign each other's dollar bill or currency at the time. In fact, I just recently talked to a B-17 pilot and asked him if he had one. He said, "I still got mine." He said, "If we went into a bar and didn't have ours, we had to buy."
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just been fascinating.
I know people are making these connections as they listen, but I'm struck. You talk about coincidence or divine intervention here. If that tradition didn't exist, if that dollar had not been passed down to you, if you hadn't rediscovered it a year and a half ago, you never would have met this man who knew your father so well and heard all these stories that you couldn't have found out anywhere else.
Right.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. Yeah. It's circumstance or spiritual intervention. There's a bigger force that is working at this.
Was there one thing, and I know you want to move on to some other elements that have unfolded here, but of all the things that Mr. Holmes shared with you about your father, was there something that was the most meaningful to you, or just was like, "Wow, that's an incredible story. I'm so glad I know that"?
The thing that was very profound he kept sharing was the love my dad had for my mom.
And you see that in some of the letters that they write to each other. And there's a letter where he says, "We might be having a baby. I really hope that's true. I really want a baby."
Right. One of the letters that I discovered, my dad writes that my mom gave him cigars on Father's Day, June of 1942. And he wonders to my grandmother, "I wonder if Shorty," my mom's nickname, "I wonder if she's trying to tell me something." The other thing that's profound to me is the obvious love that he had for my grandmother and the real strong belief that he had in God. Because throughout his letters, he relates, "If it's God's will, it's God's will." And I didn't realize that there was that. It just brought so many dimensions of him that really hold him in high esteem, not just by being a man that was killed at war, but a great father to be so excited about my birth and his love for my mom and his love for my grandmother and their love for each other. That's pretty profound. And people that have read my book, that's what they comment on the most.
Mm-hmm.
Is that bond, that family unit. And so I tried to capture not just war stories and issues, but in my book I try to also capture the microcosm of an American family at war.
And I know you've done that very powerfully. The book is Letters Home from a Fallen Hero, A Son's Quest for His Father. It's on Amazon. I have it linked at hometownheroesradio.com, and you can find a lot of photos from it on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And the amazing thing about this book is so much of it has unfolded after you started writing it. You started writing it before most of the stuff in it actually unfolded in the last couple of years. That's crazy. What else has happened just in these last few months and years?
Well, I received an email from the same member of the Army Air Force Forum. He contacts me and he says, "Roger, you need to open this link." This is May 28th of last year.
Mm-hmm.
I open the link and it's a War Department film, filmed the day that my dad was killed. It's a 9.5-minute film.
What were you feeling as you opened that link?
I didn't know what to expect. He explains to me before I opened it that there's a gal that is bedridden, and she goes into the National Archives and she digitizes old War Department films, and that she had just digitized this and just released it. And he says, you need to see it. So I'm sitting here at my desk. The film opens up. There's no audio, but it shows the guys playing volleyball. They then drop the net. They go over for the briefing. And I see what appears to be my father in this group at the briefing. In fact, I replayed it 4 or 5 times. I go, that looks like him. That's got to be him. They leave the briefing, and the film now continues. They're now on the bombing run, and it shows them dropping bombs on Sfax. The very tail end of the film, it shows a plane being hit, and it shows it on fire, and it shows it dropping out of formation. Well, that's my dad. I wanted to be very skeptical at that point and not just have wishful thinking or whatever you might want to call it. That was the only plane that went down that day, was my dad's. And the description of it and where they were in the echelon. And there's a gentleman at the gym at Lifestyles that does internet research for the DA's office. I gave him the film, and then he froze the frames for me and froze the frame where I think it's my dad. Well, there's 4 or 5 other veterans that have been following my story from day one. So I had them look, you know, here's Dad. Please, you guys, you know, go what do you think? Will they all feel the same? That's your dad, and this has to be him.
So in the last couple of years, you've gone from knowing virtually nothing about what happened to your dad to knowing exactly what happened on the mission to finding out that that was the same day he found out you were born. And now to seeing him on that day he died and his plane starting to go down.
Right.
Unbelievable.
It is.
Wow. What do you think is going to happen next? What haven't you found out yet? What's the missing piece to the puzzle?
There are several pieces to the puzzle that I'm trying to find. First of all, I've been trying to find the disposition of in the families of the crew members. I feel very strongly I need to share what I've learned.
And in doing so, you might discover if there was a third parachute.
Right. I did find the co-pilot's family. I went in to find a grave, and I looked up First Officer Andrew Palmer, and they showed a grave in Oakhurst, Texas. So I went in the internet, and there was a little church, Baptist church, right next to the cemetery. I called the pastor, told him who I was, what I was trying to do. He found the headstone of Andrew Palmer. There's no remains. It's just he's there
just
memorialized.
Like in Tunisia, where his name is
right.
Also. Yeah.
Through Ancestry.com, I found his cousin. She didn't know the circumstances of Andrew's death or being in Tunisia. We have corresponded. She's a recipient of my book. We even found a picture of Andrew Palmer in Sergeant Lang's footlocker in Oregon and sent it to her. And she related that, well, he didn't have any descendants. And I said, no, he did. She said, how do you know that? And I said, it happens to be written in the book that Sergeant Lang wrote. He had gotten married just before he went overseas. And I said, your job is to find his wife. Well, she did. But she passed away in 2002, didn't have any descendants. My mission right now, and I've not had a lot of luck, is I want to find the family of John Carrington, who was the bombardier. I have so much to share with them. And he's chronicled in that book. He's chronicled in my book. I have all the circumstances and the mission report and things like that. I have friends that are out searching for me. I've been searching for months. That's what I really want to find. That will bring closure to me for the crew. Dick Lang and the other survivor reentered the service and died of health issues later. What's interesting is when I had been calling and talking to Sergeant Lang's son, after he talked to me, he said, he called me and he goes, Roger, I just went in and found my dad's footlocker and I found a manuscript that he had written that we didn't know existed. And he talks about your dad in this manuscript. It's before the crash. And he says, I'm giving it to my mom and she'll type it up for you. His mother's 88 years old. Her name is Irma. She typed it all up and sent it to me. And I was so moved by it. An 88-year-old woman doing this for me. So I emailed her and I said, ma'am, I lost my mom a couple years ago, and I miss her. And I said, can I adopt you as my mom? So now she emails me, hi, son, love mom. And she emails me a couple days a week. It's increased my family and my contacts, and I've just met so many wonderful people through this.
A couple more questions I have to ask you, but first of all, with this book, and it's a great, thick, thorough book with a picture of a very handsome young pilot in the Army Air Corps, Roger Jameson on the front. That's Roger's dad. Letters Home from a Fallen Hero is the name of the book, and you'll find it on Amazon.com. When people read this book, what is it you want to leave them with? What do you want them to take from this experience of following your journey that you've been on?
Well, several things. In fact, some of those are coming true now. Again, I've read many, many books, soldier stories, etc. A lot of them were one-dimensional, and I really wanted to capture an American family at war, not just the warriors or not just two lovers. It's what my grandmother went through as a riveter, and she describes trying to get meat and trying to raise chickens to eat and what she was going through. And we were successful in World War II because of the family unit and our country pulling together. And that's what I tried to capture. The second thing that it's doing, it's opened the door now for other people that are trying to now find out about their dads. I'm being contacted almost weekly now of people with similar situations that are trying to ask for my help. The one main theme, everyone that reads my story of circumstance and spiritual intervention feels that this would be movie material more so than a book. Because of that, I had seen a documentary that Nancy Spielberg, Steven Spielberg's sister, was doing on the Israeli war. And so I sent her an excerpt of my story. And she replied right back that this is movie material. She doesn't have time to do it, but to hang in there.
Maybe that's one of the next chapters. And if it is a movie, I know who can play your dad, because that photo, I mean, it's Jerry O'Connell, the actor. It looks just like him. It's incredible. I've got to ask you, though, about your dad. Because some people maybe have bounced around a little bit in this story, and they're saying, well, what's this about the blonde-haired kid in Italy? And that part of Italy is really close to where your dad's plane went down.
Correct.
So in the back of your mind, there's this possibility. Maybe he did survive. He had to escape. This is still hostile territory. He doesn't want to be a POW. You tell me what goes through your mind and what you really think happened. Do you believe that he died, or do you believe he survived and had some other family in Italy?
First of all, the crash where the plane went down was between Tunisia and southern Italy. The two survivors were pulled out of the water by two Italian fishermen. The Italian fishermen took them to a German hospital. In some of the correspondence, observers saw a launch heading in that direction. Where we lived in southern Italy would have been a logical place if whoever it was, my dad or one of the other two, that would have been a logical place to take him. The Germans had that area occupied. That was a military operation at that time. There's a possibility with my mom, and the way the story goes and the things that are coming out after all these years, there's a remote possibility, but I don't want to just be consumed by it. I'm just so happy right now with what I know, and I don't want to go on a quest and sometimes let sleeping dogs lie. I don't know. I really can't answer that honestly.
So if you do make a movie, it might be one of those with alternate endings.
Could be. Or leave cliffhanger.
There you go. Well, I think you've left everyone on the edge of their seat in this program today, Roger. And I know you recently made a change to your book. There was a way that you wanted your book to conclude.
I recently went to Stockton Airfield. That's where my dad got his wings and married my mother. And they allowed me to go into the archives and just go through their books. And I came across a document that hit me very, very hard that I think captures the spirit of these men that went off to war, these warriors. And I really would like to read that, because this describes them and describes the mentality of these young boys that went to war.
And you never got to know your father, but it seems like this short statement helps you understand who your father was and what
he was
about.
Right. And and all the rest of the men that you interview. And I took this out of the class of 42H at Stockton Field, and it's a dedication. And they said, we, the class of 42H, dedicate this, our final class book, to our country's future, a future that we will have a part in forming, a future that we must secure even though it cost our life and the lives of countless others. In our strength lies the strength of our nation. In our weakness lies our country's weakness. There will be no weakness. As each of us enters combat, we must remember that we fight for our life, our country's life, and the lives of millions enslaved. Our future as a nation, as a guiding force in the world, will depend upon our success or failure. We will not fail. Before us, our country faces two futures, one bright, the other dismal. We shall decide which of these two futures will be realized. We must. We will realize for our nation a future wherein men speak and live free of any shadow of dictatorship or oppression. To this we have dedicated not only this book, but our lives.
Wow. 1942. That's where America was. That's what these young men were fighting for. And I get the sense that you're including this now at the end of your book is not just to paint a historic picture, but there's also some present day value.
Right.
What impact do you feel or hope that that can have today for the folks who read it?
I hope we can reinstill that. This feeling from these young men just overpowers me. I have been working with the veterans. I put on a class at COS to help them get back into the workforce, etc. We have brave young men that are going over, and they have this also. But I just want to see our country kind of come together again like we did. And reading something like this just gives me that feeling.
And you know that's what was in your father's heart. And you made a statement earlier that I think is worth another question about. You said that this journey you've been on, and again, it started pretty innocently and pretty small. And boy, has it grown. The mushroom just keeps spreading. Those ripples are still going, and we don't know where else it's going to take you. But you said that it's helped you learn who your father was and helped you learn who you are. What do you understand about yourself now that you didn't before you started this journey?
I found that I have the same sensitivities that my dad had, the same humor, his love for my grandmother. In fact, I wear my grandmother's diamond that was in her engagement ring. She kind of helped raise me when my mom lost my dad. She was single for 4 years before she met my stepdad. My grandmother's been an integral part of my life, and so I have that same love for her that my dad did. My mom and I were very close, and so I just feel this. There are a lot of his particles in me.
No doubt. I'm fixating a little bit on that dollar bill, that short snorter with all the signatures, and I'm just imagining you as a kid knowing that was back there, and for whatever reason, not throwing it in your wallet or going and spending it on a lollipop or a milkshake or whatever.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that $1 bill is worth a lot more than a dollar to you.
Oh, absolutely. It's priceless. It's changed my life. For the last 2 years, I've been in a different world. And I wasn't in a place to do that when I was working. I finally decided when I started that I was going to retire even my part-time work and devote myself to this. And I became immersed in it and went through quite a few different emotions.
Oh, I imagine. And God's timing is always perfect. Isn't that amazing? I guess you're quite the detective now, huh?
Yeah. I don't know if it's smart or Sam Smart or whatever, but...
Well, I think it's an inspiration to folks who are going to read your book. Again, that book, Letters Home from a Fallen Hero, A Son's Quest for His Father. Boy, has that quest been an exciting and unexpected one for Roger Murray. I know people are inspired today hearing you. There are a lot of others out there who don't know about their fathers, what they did in World War II, whether they survived or not. Is there any piece of advice that you would share with those folks who have always kind of wondered but never taken the time to investigate?
Absolutely. Pull those documents out. Pull the letters out. There's so many resources on the internet now. See, if I would have started this 10 years ago, I wouldn't have gotten here because we didn't have the internet's capability.
You would have hit dead ends.
And we're losing our veterans. I also do a newsletter for the 82nd Bomb Squadron. I've been doing it for going on to a year. And I'm losing those veterans almost monthly. And so we're losing those resources. And the timing is now. We need to contact these guys that are still here and get their stories. Just devote yourself to it. because it's a piece of our history that we're losing, and they don't teach that in schools anymore, mm-hmm. like in the detail that we're learning.
And the time you put in will definitely be worth it.
I hope so.
Sure has been for you.
Yeah.
Well, and I couldn't have said it better myself when it comes to the importance of preserving this history. That's the whole mission of this program. Again, if you're interested in Roger's book, it's Letters Home from a Fallen Hero. It is on Amazon. I do have it linked at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. I hope that you enjoyed our time today as much as I did. And if there are some missing pieces to the World War II picture in your family tree, maybe you'll be motivated now to do a little digging. Remembering the more than a million Americans who have given their lives in the service of our country as we mark this Memorial Day, I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.